Hey, it would be great if we could make a heat map to see the furthest place away from roads. And it's a very simple map, but we put it in, and nationwide, it's actually our most used layer.
Well, welcome to episode 127 of the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. We are speaking with Zach from Onyx Maps. Onyx Maps is a game changer. I mean, I say that without exaggeration. It's truly changed the game in how I plan for hunts, and how I hunt in the field, and how I debrief after hunts. I mean, it's weird to think of going back to what we used to have with simply paper maps or simply a handheld GPS. With Onyx Maps, there's so many layers of information, so much data you can put into the system, get out of the system, and we're excited to talk to Zach on this episode about some of the new things that Onyx has added recently, as well as some of the things upcoming. So I hope you guys enjoy this one. If you haven't checked out Onyx Maps, I highly encourage you to do so. Before we get into the show, I want to give a shout out to Trevor McKay for leaving us an iTunes review. Trevor, we want to send you some Exo Mountain Gear swag, so please send us your shipping address to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Listeners, thank you so much for considering to leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you might be listening to this. And as always, you can reach us directly with questions, comments, or suggestions to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Okay, let's dive into this episode with Zach from Onyx Maps. Zach, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. How you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. Steve, what's going on today, man?
Living the dream. Living the dream.
Well, we're excited to dive into this one with you, Zach. I've been using Onyx Maps for quite a long time, but there's been so much that's changed over the past couple of years, this year, and even changes coming that I'm excited to talk about and learn about myself.
Yeah, no, we've been growing fast. We've only been around for 8 years, but kind of exciting. It's an exciting time. We've had a bunch of changes in the company, but then with the app especially, we've been able to kind of listen to feedback and make a couple big changes in end of July of 2017. We actually just decided to rebuild the entire app. So okay. We're excited. We've been getting everyone's feedback and just keep moving and trying to make it better and better.
Awesome. So what's your position and kind of background and history with Onyx?
Yeah. So I actually started, I'm about 2.5 years at Onyx, and I actually started right out of college. I got an internship here and lucked out, and they had an opening, and then they were crazy enough to keep me for 2.5 years. And now I'm currently doing project management for the marketing team. And I handle kind of our partnerships, ambassadors, and then work with the marketing team as far as our strategy going forward, and work very closely with our product manager and our brand manager to make sure, you know, kind of see what we want to do for the year, and then go down and work with each member of the team to kind of execute on our plans from there. So it's awesome. I get to work with great people both in the company and outside the company, and get to do cool things like jump on podcasts like this.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. Hopefully it doesn't keep you too busy in the season so you can actually get out and hunt, right? Got to test the app.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely, I try to fit some product testing in there.
We know a little bit about that. That's good. Cool. So give us kind of a high level. I mentioned even I've been using it for a while. When I first started with Onyx, it was this little micro SD card that I plugged into my what now seems like an ancient handheld Garmin. But that certainly isn't the way that I use Onyx today. Maybe for listeners who aren't familiar, or maybe they've only picked up Onyx recently, what's kind of the high level overview of Onyx and how it's grown over these past years that you mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. So our founder is from Montana, Eric Siegfried. He started by he needed a, you know, he just needed a place to hunt. He knew there was a bunch of public land, but he didn't know exactly, you know, looking at a paper map, it doesn't show your current location. And so he decided that, you know, he, all this information's out there, and he started putting them on a chip and an SD card that fits in your Garmin GPS unit. And he was doing that out of his garage. And then he ended up bringing a couple guys on, and it took off instantly. I think the first store was like a Sportsman's Warehouse. And once they start selling it locally, it just blew up. And we had the chip, and then people started asking for more states. And then in 2011, the chip was very popular. We had our, you know, public and private landowner names with the boundaries. And then we also had like walk-in areas. Well, then we kind of realized that everyone, you know, is still carrying a smartphone no matter what, even if they're using the chip and GPS, they still have it with them. So we had some requests start making an app, and that's kind of when that started up. And now it's, you know, it's just continued to grow. The company's grown since then. We're up to about 80 employees, and it was, the app was great, and the last couple of years has been great. But then last year we kind of realized that it was growing so fast that we couldn't scale with it. So we hired on a bunch of engineers and brought everything internal, and decided that we were going to kind of set fire to our old app and rebuild it from the ground up, and use, you know, all the customer feedback that we've had over the couple of years, and pretty much make a new app based around still, you know, helping people find a place to hunt, but utilizing certain features, you know, and being able to save maps for offline use, or, you know, make layers easier to find. And so that's why the last day of July, we ended up releasing our newest hunt app. And it was just our newest iteration that was built, 100% off user feedback.
Yeah, that's cool. I was one of these guys, makes me feel old to think about it now, but when the app first came out and I was so used to my Garmin handheld and the chip, I was so hesitant to like fully trust using my smartphone, especially on, you know, going on an extended week-long hunt. I'm thinking, am I going to run out of battery? Is this thing actually going to work? Like, how's this going to go? And so my hunting partner, he actually used his phone that year, and I still continued to keep my handheld GPS. But then after seeing how well it worked for him for the last couple of years, I've been doing just the phone, and it's worked out well. Do you have any tips maybe for guys who are maybe new to this idea of using their phone kind of as a standalone GPS, or using it with OnX, and who are worried maybe about signal and battery and those kinds of issues that may keep guys from relying on the phone?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just to touch on that too, I was as apprehensive as anyone. I definitely use the chip, you know, and I would use the app. It seemed like I would use it for more scouting purposes. And then when I went to the field, it's easy to throw in AA batteries in a Garmin GPS, you know, and it's like, I'm not worried about getting it wet or beating it up. So I did use the chip. And then the last 2 years, I transferred. I'm using straight just the app. And really the biggest thing for me was being able, so, you know, all smartphones actually have a GPS unit in them that's separate from our app. And so really what we're doing is we're just utilizing that capability by, when you save it, so if you know the area you're going, so for example, like you're talking like a week-long backpack hunt, I'm assuming you're not going to be covering, you know, you're going to be covering 10 to 15 miles, but you're not going to be covering 100 miles. So you know the general area that you're going to be hunting. So what you have to do with the app is, if you know the area, when you're in service or Wi-Fi, there's just this off-grid portion at the bottom of the app. And once you hit that, it says save new map. And pretty much what it does is it saves a screenshot of the public private land ownership and all the map layers that you have active at that time, saves it directly to your phone. And then once you go to the field, all you have to do is click go offline, and it will work without service. So your phone's on airplane mode. Don't need, you know, it's just going to use the GPS in your phone and show your current location. So that little blue dot where you're currently at will still walk around. You can still do tracks. You can still mark waypoints. You can do everything. The biggest thing is just being prepared and kind of knowing where you're going before you head out. And so you can save it at five or at three different levels. We have 5x5, 10x10 miles, and then 50x50. And what's kind of nice is, you know, each one is a little different. It's just a little, if you want to see like 5x5, for example, the smallest, that is the clearest picture. You can zoom in the furthest. So if you're really worried about like aerial imagery, being able to see like clear cuts, open basins, stuff like that, creek crossings, that'll be your best bet. But if you're more concerned on just general, you know, trailheads, public, private land ownership, that 50 by 50 works great. And generally, I would venture to guess that not a lot of people are going to venture off that. And if so, you could just save two or three of those. So you can save your entire hunting area and then you're covered. You don't have to worry about service. You don't have to worry about trekking off your saved map. And so that's one thing that's great is when you put your phone on airplane mode, it's not searching for service. So it's going to save your battery tremendously. And then the other thing that, you know, a lot of us in the office do, and you see a lot of them, there's 100 different brands is these external battery chargers. You know, the Poseidon, the Dark Energy, a lot of people use, but even like on Amazon, I mean, there's some that are, you know, rugged, water resistant. I wouldn't call them waterproof, but they're like $25. And I would still venture people are still carrying their cell phones in case they get a little bit of service to be able to contact, or if they're using them for a camera. So packing, you know, a little tiny external battery charger in your phone is lighter than carrying your phone and a GPS unit.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, again, going on a week long hunt, I carry one of those little battery backups and I'll touch it after day three, after day four, just to kind of fill my phone up. But I've never come really close to running out of battery, and I've been quite impressed. But one thing I don't do a ton of, other than maybe after the animal's down or if I start trailing something specific, is, you know, trace and leave my breadcrumb of my trail. And obviously that would consume more battery if you're in that mode a lot, correct?
Yep, absolutely. So it's using it. It will consume more battery. Again, if you put it on airplane mode, it'll help, you know, kind of negate what you would be doing if it was on trying to grab service as well. But what's kind of nice is even when you do that, you know, let's say your battery's not an issue, when it's offline, it's still going to save. So you still have that save for later use. As soon as you hit service or Wi-Fi, it's going to actually save it to the cloud and you'll have it on your account. So then you could log in on my phone and pull up your waypoints, your tracks, you know, whatever markups you've made when out hunting.
So speaking of waypoints and kind of pulling them up, one thing that is newer is the waypoint sharing feature, which was something going into the last season I was begging for, and I'm sure a bunch of customers were begging for, and you guys responded with it. So how does that work? Does everyone who wants to receive a waypoint also have to have an Onyx account? Kind of walk us through what the feature is, how it works, and how guys can put it to use.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this one, you know, it's kind of interesting because it's like, hunters want to share stuff, but they also don't want to share stuff. Like, obviously, you don't want to just share your waypoints, your best hunting spots with anyone. And so this was a tough one because we wanted to make sure it was secure. We wanted to make sure people don't accidentally share them with the wrong people. So this one took a little bit longer to get it going. But now that we have, you know, we were kind of nervous releasing it, but people love it. And, you know, it's nice just being able to share with hunting partners, loved ones, to let them know where they're at. But what's kind of great is, so if you just mark a waypoint on it, and you tap on the hunt app, there'll be that little share in the bottom right corner. When you hit that, it's going to pull up a link. And you can send this link however you want. It could be a text, email, you know, instant message, whatever. And whoever you send it to, all they got to do is tap on it. And so if they don't have a membership, if they've never purchased one, never installed it, it's going to ask them to install it and create an account. And once they do that, they can see the waypoint. They don't have to purchase anything. They get that for free. If they do have a waypoint, or if they do have a membership, it's just going to open up their current app and then it's going to show them exactly where that waypoint is you shared. And so right now, you know, with that, if you're going to share with a group of people, you'd have to send it to like each person on that email or send to like a group text. Whoever has that link can view it. And I understand, you know, like, people want to be able to share multiple waypoints, and that's something that we're kind of working on, hopefully coming out here in a couple months, that being able just to share more data, more waypoints, tracks, etc., with, you know, your close friends or loved ones.
So if I send a waypoint to my hunting partner before the hunt and he does have an account already, can he then save that waypoint as well so it'll continue to show up kind of in his map as one of his waypoints?
Yep, absolutely. So as soon as he, you know, clicks on the link and opens it up, it's going to save to his map. So then he has the access to that.
Okay, perfect. So it's not like a one-time have to have the link to see it type deal.
Nope, not a one-time. That is the one thing that's tough, you know, and I guess if you're going to share a waypoint, they they know your location, but you can't pull it back. Once you share that waypoint with someone, they have it.
Right, right. Okay, cool. So I know kind of some other new features coming out while we're talking about waypoints is a go-to waypoint feature. Walk us through that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was one, this was 100% user feedback, because honestly, it was, we would like to make it more innovative, I guess, but this is just the traditional like old Garmin GPS where you can click on a waypoint and it gives you a direct path. You know, it's going to point that line directly to it. And it's crazy how many people wanted this. And it, there's definitely use for it when it's dark and you just want to know, you know, line exactly how far you are from the waypoint that you, that you're trying to get to. But then also, you know, what's the absolute line of sight direct path to navigate back. And so this was one that really we, I remember when we were talking about the new app back, you know, and working on it last year, we didn't think this one was necessary. And we, you know, we wanted to make something a little more innovative where, you know, because line of sight's not necessarily the best way to get there. You might have to go through a river, over a mountain, over five mountains, you know, but it will point you in the straight direction. And, you know, we have some ideas of stuff that could improve this that, you know, will come out in the future. But for now, there's been enough people asking for it, and it's definitely has its value and its place. And so what's great is you just tap on the waypoint, click go to, and then it's going to tell you how far you are and then which direction you need to head to get there. And it'll give you a line, a straight line to that waypoint.
And I guess as you do have to kind of take some detours and things like that, it'll just keep rerouting and pointing you back to the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool.
One quick question before we go too far. When you download like the 5 mile view or the 10 mile view, are you grabbing all the information and all the layers, or do you got to go through and select like the different layers?
You have to select the layers you want active, but you do get all three base maps. So you'll get the satellite, the hybrid, and the topo. So
okay.
When you save it, you want to make sure you have the ones that you think are, you're going to need. But once you do save it, so like, you know, let's say you want to know the historic wildfire layer, for example, and you want to see where these historic burns are and be able to see what year they are, but that's not necessarily something that you'll use when you're in the field hunting. We suggest that you just have them active, save it, and then once you go to offline, you can just go into your layers and deselect the ones, and it'll deactivate them for you.
Okay. So, but when you go to do the save, they all got to be active.
So, yep, they got to be active if you
want. Okay. Okay. I think I made that mistake before. I think I just had like aerial imagery active and then downloaded it and thought I was getting the rest of the information and got out to the field and realized I didn't have it. So
yeah. Gotcha. So it'll save your waypoints in there, but if you want, you have to have the layers active when you,
okay.
But then you can always turn them off after.
Gotcha.
You mentioned the base maps, the satellite, the hybrid, and then the topo. And I know that there's been, has been, and I think are going to be more coming updates to those base maps. Kind of walk us through it, maybe what's new in the base maps, and maybe some recommendations on when to use which type deal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so on, you know, these three, we simplified from our last app. We had a bunch of different ones, and really, these were the most popular ones people were using. So we just decided to go with these three, and we decided to make our own topographical base map. And, you know, the first time it went through, it was good. We had a couple things, but we had people asking for just more detail. It was just a little too vanilla. Didn't, you know, the contour lines were difficult to read, no vegetation. And so we actually last week just released a brand new topo base map. And with that, you're going to see now you can see hillshade, vegetation, and then the contour lines are much easier to read. It's just a much cleaner base map. And like we put it up, you know, on social, and it's always a little nerve wracking when you put out a new feature because you don't know how the customers are going to take it. They might like it. They might, you know, poke holes through it and find something else. But so far I was looking at it and we had 50 comments on one post and they all looked positive. So that's definitely, we love seeing that. You know, it hasn't been around that long. We got to use it a little bit, but it'll be interesting to see kind of what folks think once they get in the field. And then kind of coming up in the future is our next kind of task that we're looking at is we're looking at always improving our aerial imagery, our satellite base map. We don't have, you know, satellites taking pictures here at OnX. We're using other sources. So we're currently working on getting more updated sources so we can just have a cleaner, just more up-to-date base map. And then once we get that source, we're going to take our topographic map and put it with that aerial, and that's where we'll get our satellite. And so we have a couple things in the works right now that we're hoping will be, they'll definitely be out before hunting season, but we're hoping in the next couple months we'll have some improvements to the other two base maps to release as well.
Let's get into kind of some of the layers that go on top of these base maps. I don't want to talk about what is just there in the system, because it was one of these deals where I think some of these layers were available for a while and I literally just weren't aware of them and then discovered them and I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. So, but I want to talk about what's there. And then as we talk about some of these, I want to talk about use cases for them, how you use them or see them used most often, whether that's preseason, mid-hunt, you know, regardless. So first of all, I think it's maybe helpful to make some distinction within the app. There are statewide and then nationwide layers. Why is that? And can you kind of give an example of some of the differences?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So with that, you know, you can buy, kind of taking one step back, we have our pricing model. We have two different tiers. We have a state membership, which is our premium, and that's just one state worth of data. And that's $29.99. And then we have elite, which is all 50. And that's $99.99. And the reason we do that is because there is a lot of work that goes into collecting, you know, the state by state private parcels. We get those from the county level. And so it's just, you know, to activate that, we look at it as a state basis. Most people hunt one to, you know, really about 75% of people hunt one state. And then there's maybe 60%. And then there's those other folks that hunt two to three. And then there's some that hunt, you know, five plus, but really a lot of people, they're hunting one state at a time. So we figured we would give what we feel is the most used information at one state at a time, because that's kind of what they're focused on. And that's why if you go to the state level, it's going to be private parcels, public land, and then it depends on state. There's some state specific ones, but like for Montana, for example, in most states, there's possible access, which is private timber companies that, you know, you can possibly access. It varies by state, but some like a Weyerhaeuser, Plum Creek, where it's technically private land, but it's for public access, so you can go hunt on it. And then the other thing that we have that's great and a lot of people use is the block management walk-in areas. And those are kind of state specific. Montana has block management, which is private land, but it's for public access, and it's a state specific program. Same thing with like a North Dakota, which is plots lands. And that's kind of the state level. Those really, the biggest thing on our state layers is just helping people figure out where they can and can't hunt. Whether they're hunting private land, it gives you the private landowner's name, so you know exactly what their boundary is and whose land it is. But then for the West, where the majority of people are hunting public land, we really just, you know, want to highlight these public land boundaries so you know exactly whose land you're on, especially if you're hunting like a checkerboard area, you know, in eastern Montana, hunting antelope, where it is literally looks like a checkerboard and you're navigating these mile by mile sections. It allows you to see your current location in, you know, according to where you're at on the map and whose land it is. But then if you jump over on the nationwide, this is kind of where these are things that we have either made in-house or we get from another source. And it's not a state source. It's generally, you know, throughout the nation, or else it's throughout the West or different areas like that. And so some of the popular ones is like the roadless layer, for example. We actually worked with Randy Newberg on that. He was looking at the app one day, and he actually did this with Microsoft Paint. He took a screenshot of one of his hunting areas, and he had all the roads going on it, and he took like the red paint marker and started scribbling out everywhere that there's a road on the map. And this was, you know, so he took a picture from his laptop, put in Microsoft Paint, and he's scribbling out all these areas. And the reason was, is he was trying to figure out what wasn't in red. He knew that's where he wanted to go hunt, because that was the furthest area from roads. And so he actually brought that up. He's like, hey, it would be great if we could make a heat map to see the furthest place away from roads. And it's a very simple map, but, you know, it's pretty easy for us. And we put it in, and this was one we definitely didn't know how people were going to take it. And nationwide, it's actually our most used layer, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
That trips me out that just the, I guess for me, the programming I thought involved in that would be crazy, but you said that was pretty easy for you guys to do.
Yeah, no, we got that one done in like 2 weeks. And
yeah, so obviously there's a way to figure, like, have it recognize. Well, I guess you install the different layers and you can put roads on there, huh?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. We had, you know, all our roads layer and we just made a heat map that didn't include those. And, you know, it's definitely much more technical. We have a bunch of very smart, talented people
right
on it. To simplify, yes, we were able to use, you know, a recommendation from Randy from Microsoft Paint and and I get a layer that a lot of people like to use.
That's cool. One thing, just as a general statement, that the amount of information inside of that app is just flat out unbelievable. It seems like it would just take decades to compile all that and put it into the app.
Yeah, we have 20 GIS employees who are working every single day on these layers, but then also our private public land. And then we also have, I can't remember the exact number, but 15 plus engineers as well in our Bozeman office working on this. And I mean, we have some very talented, smart individuals working daily on just, you know, trying to improve it and optimize it and make sure it's the best mapping software for someone using whatever they're using it for, whether it's hunting, fishing, you know, anything off the pavement.
Might be a totally, you know, a question you have zero insight into, but I'm just kind of curious. I've noticed, as we talked about the statewide layers, that certain states offer things that other states don't, obviously. You know, just random stuff. Like some states, there'll be data on where shooting ranges are located. Some states have pretty specific data around species and activity for those species throughout the seasons. Some will have, you know, specifics on OHV use and some don't. Is there any sort of, I don't know, movement or discussion to kind of get some states up to date or to start having some states include data that other states already do?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure I got kind of what you're asking, but just like consistency across the board.
Yeah.
It is interesting because there are some very different ones. There's some big game distribution and stuff like that. And really what it comes down to is, you know, we have our GIS team split up with different responsibilities, but there are folks out there that are just going and looking for, you know, some valuable data that we think hunters can use. And so they're contacting the state level and just kind of seeing what's being collected. And then if it's something that we see as value, then we, you know, take it, internalize it, clean it up, make sure it's accurate, and then we make it a layer. It's difficult to say because it's really a state, you know, some of these are private agencies as well. You know, for example, we had, and this is a more nationwide layer, but it's broken out by county, but like NWTF, they were collecting this. They, you know, they'd been doing it since 1988, and we decided that it would be a good map for people to be able to see. So we took that data and we just internalized it, made it so it worked in the app and made it a layer. But as far as the state level, really it's difficult. It's just kind of what's out there. They're searching and researching every single day, trying to figure out what would be valuable. And, you know, we don't have people boots on the ground collecting this for us. We rely on these other sources. So that's kind of where those come from. But as far as making it consistent across the board, that's definitely something that would be pretty difficult. I know there's a lot of these kind of access programs, like similar to like block management and stuff like that, that some states are in communication. And when we talk to those states, we just say, hey, they're very valuable. We know people use them. We know we have a resource that shows them that how to, you know, view it and use them. And I'm not saying that that moves the needle for these states that don't have them, but it definitely, you know, we're advocates for it.
Yeah, that's cool. It's cool that even the states that have the program but might not realize how important it is, that you guys have that voice there of going, you know, we have all these hunters, they want to use this, we want to make sure the data is good. Like, that's a cool kind of an in-between connection between the hunter and the state.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. And it's kind of one of those things, you know, if it comes up, we'll definitely, our biggest thing is we want to create access, you know, and it's, we want to work with companies like RMEF and Backcountry Hunters and Anglers who create public access. But our biggest thing too is, we just want people to get out in the field and, you know, feel confident that they can go hunt somewhere, whether they're hunting private, whether they're hunting block management or public land, you know, a national forest. Our biggest thing is we just want people not to have to worry about where they can go. We want them cut that out for them so they can spend more time hunting.
So diving into some of the other specific layers, you mentioned the roadless one. That one's pretty straightforward, but is incredibly helpful. There's a couple layers on fire activity, both current and then historical fires. Walk us through those, and then if you have any, maybe any tips on how hunters can use that information to plan for a hunt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. These ones were huge for us. We've had them for a couple years, and we take our current wildfire, that's actually from NC Web, which is similar to what wildland firefighters use, but that's updated. I believe during it's updated daily at like 11 o'clock or something like that a.m. But what's kind of nice is it'll show when there's current wildfires, it'll show a boundary of where it's at, the name of it, and then you can tap on the screen and it'll actually pull up what we call feature query, and it'll tell you just a little bit more information. It'll tell you the size of it and then when it started. Looking at the historic wildfire, that's kind of a cool one because it just breaks out fire name. If you're looking at it, you activate it, it'll go by color. It'll show you kind of roughly where it was at, give you the year. And then as soon as you tap on it, it'll pull up some information and it'll tell you the size of it, the year was, how many acres, and then the name of it. And these are great because for one, you know, like current wildfire last year in Montana, for example, well, across the West, it was Missoula is in a valley, and it was, I mean, we couldn't even see. It was terrible air quality, just smoke. It was pretty awful to be hunting in. And we had, I think we were surrounded by like four different fires. And so for current, obviously, like that was great for me, archery hunting, that I knew where to stay away from. You know, I knew what was closed down, where not to go. I actually had waypoints in the current wildfire that I had hunted from years past. So that kind of helped, you know, allow me to go find a place to hunt that I wasn't going to be in danger, I guess. But the historic wildfire, that one's really interesting. I really, you know, it's popular. Hunt and Burns is great. Really, the biggest thing is being able to see, you know, find those ones that are a couple years old. That's where the sun's going to be able to shine through the trees and you're going to see the best forage, and that's where the best feed are. And generally speaking, there's usually critters running around there, you know, especially like with spring bear coming up. You know, we looking for clear cuts, especially in western Montana where it's pretty thick. Clear cuts and burns are generally a good place to go find some bears. That's where the green grass is going to be at first. And it's where it's open, where you can actually spot. So those are kind of the big things that we see in the spring. But then in the fall, you know, last year there was a pretty substantial burn in western Montana that was a couple years old, and there was quite a few elk navigating through each week, and we'd go, you know, weekend, it was not too far outside of town. And that was definitely a place of interest that we would go hit up because we knew that there was good food in there, and generally there were going to be animals going back and forth through there.
So the trail layers, one thing that I was excited to see was not only that the trails were just there, but have improved that layer and now have kind of like some slope shading, slope rating, as well as length segments on trails. Kind of talk to us a bit more about the trail layer.
Yeah. So this one, you know, this one's great because for one, like scouting wise, just summer scouting, especially if you're hunting a lot of trailheads, national forest, stuff like that. We pride ourselves on having one of the best trails data sets out there of any map. It's definitely a big focus. We have a couple of employees who are just focused on making sure we have accurate trail data. And so, you know, you can have the basic trails that you can see and find the different trailheads, but then we added the mileage. And so what that does with the trail mileage and slope, the mileage will give you a little red dot and the distance between the dots. So if you go to the trailhead and to the first junction or first corner, it'll have two red dots and then it'll tell you how far it is. So it gives you kind of a gist of how far you need to go to get up to, you know, the next intersection or whatever. But then also on top of that, if you turn on our trail slope that you mentioned, it'll just give you a heat map on how difficult it is. And so green is the easiest and then red is obviously the steepest on that. And it'll just, you know, it gives you a good, just kind of high level, just how difficult is this trail going to be? Where's the harder parts? Especially when you're looking at, you know, some of these places people are going in, you know, 2 to 10 miles to go hunt if they're heading from a trailhead, and just being able to actually know that distance, but then also kind of gauge what the difficulty is going to be before you head out.
Yeah, that's an awesome layer. I'm sitting here looking at it on my phone right now.
Something that we've gotten questions on so many times are just people, I guess, especially hunters that are newer or maybe newer to hunting the West, is just them understanding where they can legitimately access public land and kind of take off, whether that be trail systems, specific access points, things like that. Just for listeners in that position, is there seeing roads and trails and other data through the app, as long as it's within a public land area, which they can clearly see on this app? I mean, they're pretty much good to go, right?
Yeah, for the most part. There are some kind of corner cases and some circumstances where there's some old easements that are listed as trails, but, you know, as things change, and we definitely try to update it and keep it, but, you know, it's definitely the responsibility is on the hunter. But yes, if it's a major road, a county road, or a trailhead that heads into public, you are generally good to go. And it's one of those things that, you know, like if they're interested in going and they're hunting somewhere new, they're doing their research, and you're looking for, let's say they're looking for a large piece of public land, and you find a national forest, we have kind of the recreation sites, you can see where the trails are, and you can find a trailhead that starts, you know, the road takes you up to the piece of public. There's a trailhead there where you can park, and you can head up in the national forest and spend as much time up there as you would like.
On the complete flip side of that, and kind of the public access issue, you guys have the private land data within the app. What are some ways that hunters can use that? What are some maybe tips on looking at potentially gaining hunting access to private parcels?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, this is something that I actually got back from, you know, it's very different how we look at it in the West to how folks in the East look at it. And when I was back, I went to the NWTF convention in Nashville, and that was their biggest thing is, I think, you know, generally they're a little more open in the East to asking for private access. It seems like, you know, we are fortunate in the West to have all this public land, so hunting private isn't as big in general for us. And for them, you know, they really appreciated the private landowner names. You know, it's a lot easier to go up to someone and say, you know, hey, you know, Zach Sandow, can I hunt your land, instead of just going up and saying, hey, sir, you know, never met you, I don't know your name, but I'd like to hunt. And it just kind of gives a little bit more information. You know, we don't give phone numbers, but if you're looking for an area, let's say there's a private piece, you know, you can see where it's at. You know where it's at because you see it on the map, and then you know whose name it is. So we give you enough information, we feel, that you can actually go do a little bit of research, find their phone number, you know, go ask them before hunting season and try to get access to these private places. And, you know, this is definitely generally speaking, but landowners are usually, you know, they can be open to letting people access their land. It's just more how it's done and if it's done respectfully. And we feel that if, you know, you have a little bit of information going in, actually knowing their name, doing a little research, that it gives you a better chance of being able to hunt these areas.
Some of the newer layers, at least new to me, I'm not even sure when all these were released, but they're new to me, are the hunting specific layers. You kind of mentioned the NWTF. I know that Eastman's has a layer now, and then there's also a layer with Boone and Crockett that you guys have partnered with. So each of the three of those, can you kind of walk us through what those are, what benefit they provide, and how they integrate with the app?
We'll start with the Eastman's layer. So we've worked with Eastman's for years now, and they have their members research section. And they've had that, you know, if you're a member of their magazine, you get this. If you pay for that yearly, you get it in their bow hunter and hunting journal. And so what we did is we took their deer, elk, and pronghorn information, which is pretty much, it gives them, or it gives users, a breakdown of, you know, the data, the hunting statistics or the draw statistics, and then also their forecast of trophy potential for deer, elk, and antelope. And so if you turn on deer, for example, it's going to be broken down by hunting unit, and it'll give you 3-year average, non-resident draws, and then Guy Eastman's trophy forecast. And that's, you know, working with different sources to develop that each year. And then also on top of that, it'll tell you which unit it is and give you a weighted score on it. And so What's kind of great with this one is, you know, right now we're in the heat of permit season and kind of doing that scouting, trying to figure out where we're going to go. And so, you know, first you need to figure out which state you're going to hunt. Then you figure out, you want to figure out what species you're going to hunt and what species you're going to put in, but then you need to find the hunting district. And so this is just kind of a great tool. You know, any information as much as possible just helps you make a more informed decision. So this kind of gives you an idea of trophy potential, but then also, you know, a rough idea of what your draw statistics are going to be if you're a non-resident or a resident. And you know, this is one that's broken out. You can check out elk, deer, or antelope in the major, you know, 11 Western states.
And then that's just an like a add-on, and that's a yearly cost. How does that work?
Yep. So that one, the Eastman's and Boone and Crockett are a yearly cost. So those are $9.99. You actually purchase those outside of the Premium and Elite. But if you just wanted those layers, for example, you could just install the app for free and then pay the $10 to get one of the layers, or pay $20 to get both. And then, and the Boone and Crockett, you know, this one is all their records dating back to, it's 1892 or something like that. And this has all the major species, you know, 16 different species across the country. And it's just going to give you the Boone and Crockett, how many entries there were by the county level. And so this is also an interesting one, you know, just seeing, checking out your hunting spots to see what the trophies were in the last, you know, since the beginning of time that have been submitted to Boone and Crockett.
That's great. Is there a way to filter by year, or not by year, but like maybe by decade in that, or is it just kind of a,
not a filter right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Some we would like to do right now. It's just going to give you the total entries.
Total entries. Okay.
That's still cool information to see.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Then the turkey layer, walk us through that one. And is that one nationwide? Is this only kind of focused on Eastern, Midwestern states? How's it working?
Yeah. So this one is actually a nationwide layer, but it's free to all users. You can just install the app and you get it no matter what. And so what this is the NWTF since 1988 has been collecting these records. And so NWTF members can submit it, and it's a trophy system that has, you know, it gives you a breakdown of beard length, weight, and spur length. And then there's kind of six subspecies. So you have records by community, overall bird score, five-year average, kind of like what Steve's asking there, which is great to see. You know, obviously something that happened 20 years ago isn't as relevant in your hunting area as five. So this gives you kind of what the trophy potential is for that area. Then you can break them down by weight specifically, beard length, spur length. But then the last one is subspecies distribution throughout the country. And this is kind of nice, you know, with spring turkey kicking off here in Montana, for example, next week. And then a lot of the eastern states are already kind of going. It's just a good way to, you know, it's interesting to see in your hunting area kind of what, who shot what and what the records are there. And what's kind of cool is if you're a member at NWTF and you shoot one, you can submit it here, and it just, we work with them and we'll get every, I think we update this one once a year. They'll send us those records and we'll continually update them. And it just kind of gives you a heat map of all the different counties and which birds have been shot where and what the scores have been.
Man, that's so cool. It's so neat to see all this data come together in one place. Like Steve was saying earlier, the amount of information packed into this app is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's we definitely, you know, our goal is just to provide as much information as possible and work with great companies, NGOs, and data providers, and just try to give hunters as much information that they'll find value of, and all in one place.
So there, besides just the app, I mean, that's all we've talked about is the app on the phone for the most part in this, but then there's a web-based way to access all of your waypoints, the imagery and everything like that. How does that play in? Maybe if you're on your computer doing some preseason scouting, tell us about what's available there and how to access that piece.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you know, really we at Onyx, we have three products. We have our hunt chip for Garmin GPS, we have our premium membership, and then our elite membership. And so what the two memberships do is they actually give you access on your smartphone as the app, a tablet, or your computer. So you don't have to buy a web-based product on top of that. You're just buying the membership. And then you can log in on your computer, your phone, or tablet. And what's nice is any waypoints, lines, shapes, or tracks that you save once you hit service or Wi-Fi, they're going to sync up to the cloud, and then you can log into any one of those three devices and pull up all your information. So, you know, right now in the office, I'm sure there's one individual at OnX who's not working, and they're actually has web maps pulled up, and they're doing some scouting for Spring Bear and Turkey next week. I can almost guarantee it. And any waypoints that they mark, it's going to sync directly to their phone. And then when they head out to the field, those waypoints will be waiting for them. And so, you know, it's always great. On a phone's awesome, but it's great having two screens, especially if you have the double monitors with a big screen. It's a lot easier to see the map. You know, you can have your regulations for State of Idaho on one side, and then you can have the map open while you're scouting, looking for new areas on the other.
So anything else kind of within the OnX suite of products that we didn't talk about that hunters can just put to work and that will help them hunt more effectively? What are we missing?
Honestly, I mean, it's so awesome. We get all this feedback of how people hunt and how they use what they're looking for a map or a GPS unit. And it's all different, but kind of looking, you know, like shed hunting, for example, right now in Spring Bear, really, I mean, the biggest things is where are you going to go? If you're looking for somewhere new, or are you looking for private or public? But then on top of that, you know, the GPS functionality is great. I have some waypoints where I found sheds in the past. I have an idea, you know, kind of where those elk are wintering. Mark those and then go back and check. But the one thing I do, you know, a little disclaimer is, I am about the world's worst shed hunter. I just call it scouting, and then I'm at least somewhat successful. But it's one of those things that definitely go out and try to do it. But it is nice to be able to, you know, even like with tracks, I can cross off areas not to go back to because I know I walked there. Or I can see, you know, if I have a whole bunch of tracks covering one area, I can see where I've missed. Probably walked by a couple sheds.
One thing I just thought of, and this is super basic, and if guys have used the app, they probably have figured this out, but I found it so helpful when creating the waypoints, all the different little icons that you can give each waypoint. Just real quick, walk us through what that is if maybe you guys aren't familiar with the app or haven't done that yet.
Definitely organization's key. And so you can do, we have a generic waypoint, but when you mark a waypoint, you can name it. So you can name it whatever you'd like right now. If you don't, it's just a generic with the date. But let's say, you know, Spring Bear spot in Montana. So, you know, you say, you call it whatever the area is, whatever the trailhead is. And then you can actually, we have 35 different icons. So you can mark, you know, and we have a bear one on there. Mark that, name it, whatever it is. And then, you know, you can then visually, if you're looking for that and you have a bunch of waypoints in a certain area, you can find that. But then also you can go into My Content. We have that broken up into four different buckets, and you have your lines, your areas, locations, and tracks. So if I tap down on my locations, it pulls up all my waypoints that I've marked. And if I tap on one, it's going to take me directly to it. And so, you know, looking at mine right now, just around Missoula, I have a kind of mix of some turkey waypoints. I have a couple truck ones, couple generic, couple elk ones. And what's nice is I have an idea of which one I'm looking for right away. So if I tap on like the turkey one, for example, it'll give me the name of whatever, you know, however I wanted to customize it so I can stay organized.
Awesome. Zach, this has been so good. Where do you want to point listeners to go check out the app, or maybe, you know, make sure that they're getting all the latest updates if they already have the app and follow you guys on social, things like that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Honestly, for us, like, we definitely understand for folks who prefer paper maps or maybe they're using their chip. The biggest thing is, we just, you know, give it a try. I'm pretty confident we'll have something that you find value for. And we offer a free seven day trial. So if you install it, you can try it for free with all the data for one state that you want. And then if you've already tested it out, you can get, you know, more information if you want to just read up on some stuff. If you go to our website, which is just onyxmaps.com, and then /hunt will take you to our app page, and that'll kind of give you an overview of our membership. But then otherwise, yeah, you can get the app just on the iTunes and Google Play Store, or you can go to our website. And kind of the biggest thing for us, you know, we shoot a lot of updates into the app. So if you install it, there's some educational stuff in there. If you tap the menu on the left, we have this app inbox, and we update that with new feature releases, new content that's coming out, how-to videos and stuff like that. And then we also use, you know, our social media to help educate people there. But then the other thing as well is if we have feedback from our users, you know, you can always email us. We love that feedback. That's how we improve our product. They're the people out there using it. I mean, we're using it as well, but we can't spend as much time as the entire country who's out hunting. So we definitely love hearing the feedback from them.
Perfect.
Hey, is there one last question? Is there a, say a guy's had a Garmin GPS for the last 10 years and he's got his hunting spot all waypointed out with water holes and, you know, all the different things he's highlighted, access points, stuff like that. Is there an easy way to, that you're aware of as a general statement, to export out the waypoints and then bring them into the app?
Yep, absolutely. So if you actually go to our website, there's a support link and we actually have kind of a step-by-step process. And so if, and that's actually a great point there, Steve, is WebMap, you know, our chip needs to be updated. It doesn't manually do it like our app does. And so in order to do that, you buy a membership. So you get, you know, it on your phone, computer, and tablet. But what that does is you plug your chip in, you can update it. But what you can also do is you can, let's say you know, you're done with a GPS unit and you're ready to use the membership. And so you just go to our website and there's step-by-step instructions that can help you export those out on your computer. And then you pull up WebMap and you import them in and it'll import all those waypoints into the WebMap and save them. So then they're saved to your account.
Nice.
Zach, man, thanks for the time. This has been great.
Yeah, no, thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
As always, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We really do appreciate it. If you haven't yet, go back to the previous episode, which was the first installment of the Monday Minute. Give that a listen and let us know what you think. We'd love your feedback. We would love to hear your questions so we can do some Q&A stuff. And anything else. We're always open to making the show what you guys think would be valuable, helpful, or entertaining. So thank you so much for tuning in and for being part of the show with us. Catch you next week.